Hey, this is Kyle Eidelman from Southeast Christian Church, and I want to thank you for listening to the message today. As we open up the scriptures together, I pray that this message inspires you, challenges you, and is the right word at just the right time in your life. Enjoy the message.
Well, Carl, thanks for being here. I am just really excited to have this conversation and continue to learn more from you specifically about wisdom in the scriptures. And so we are in this series called Before You Decide. This is part two of three.
Part two.
Let's go. And so in part one, you posed to us this question, and I've been thinking about it a lot. And you said, it's the tool for fulfilled life. It's the best question you've ever heard.
Yes.
You said, what is the wise thing to do? And honestly, you said something else that really stuck with me. You said, having wisdom is not the same as living wisely. And it reminds me of something that my dad told me in high school. He said, Sarah, you know, sometimes there are answers that are really obvious, and it's a choice between right and wrong. But sometimes there's not an obvious answer, and it's a choice between right and left. And so I'm posing a question
back
to you.
If you told me that last week, I would have put it in my sermon.
Oh, well, Leland Parks, shout out to Dad. Like, good little snippet from high school. But posing a question back to you.
Yeah.
So if we want to do wise things, how do we even know what are the wise things to do in the first place?
Well, so that's what we're going to get into with part two. I mean, that really is the whole point of this is to figure that out. I think the root of wisdom for the Christian, so I'm just kind of talking about the Christian here, is, well, for me personally, in my life, sometimes I've over-spiritualized at times what it means to be led by the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Because sometimes being led by the Holy Spirit is this beautifully mystical thing. Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
We,
we don't know where the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
but often, I think, having studied the scriptures, that being led by the Spirit often is simply, my mind is soaked in the scriptures. Mm-hmm. My heart is soaked in prayer, and I am formed into the image of Christ. So he's just saying, follow your gut, because I am forming your gut. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really valid way to follow Christ most of the time.
Yeah, I think even for myself, sometimes I overthink it. You know, I'm thinking, is this my gut or is this the Holy Spirit?
Yeah.
You know, and what can you speak into that? Because I know I can't be the only one that struggles with that.
Well, it's so interesting, right, that of all these different types of Bible literature, that we have five entire books that are just wisdom.
Yeah.
You know, that you could take snippets out and even think, why did God put that in there? You know, and honestly, sometimes when people say the Bible's a manual for life, like, I don't know, I think the Bible is the story of God and how we connect with our Creator ultimately. And when you look at the wisdom literature, it sure seems like it's given us a lot of practical wisdom almost as a manual for life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so good. And so what does that actually look like? Like, I want to get into the practical side of this. You know, I think, you know, we can read the scriptures and say, okay, yeah, I know this, this, and this of those wisdom books, but what does that actually look like in our lives today?
Well, so let's get into today's topic.
Let's
I kind of wanted to do a part two is because we can be equipped with this question, what is the wise thing to do? And most of the time we know.
Yeah.
You know, I even think of like entertainment. Like, where's the line of what any one person should watch?
What did you call them last week? Gray areas, you said?
Yeah. Yeah. But like, you know, where's the line of what I should listen to or what I should watch or what I should, you know, look at on X or, and it's like, I don't know where the line is. Yeah. It's different for everybody, I think. But if I ask this question, I know. I know, like, I shouldn't follow them, you know, or whatever that is.
It's that deep conviction that you feel. You just know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of times I don't know. Like, I'm looking at the situation. I want to do the wise thing. I honestly have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's the right or left. I don't know. Right or left. And I think, well, I read this book several years ago called The Wisdom of Crowds. And I don't know how to pronounce the guy's last name.
Okay.
James Surowiecki is my best guess at it. But I'll tell you the opening story of the book is in 1906, there was a British scientist named Francis Galton who just for fun on a Saturday, I think, showed up at the West of England Fat Stock and Poultry Exhibition.
Casual
Sounds
Saturday.
Like a great time, right? And, you know, my wife grew up in the country, so she says this thing is not uncommon. It's the farmers and, you know, the butchers all showing up to see these animals. And so you have farmers and butchers there who are like experts in this type of thing, but you also have kids and, you know, some tourists from the city who are getting out of town for the day. And as he wanders around, they have this ox weight guess competition where anybody who wants to for free can just put in their guess of how much this ox weighs. And, you know, some small prize for whoever's closest. So all these people, kids included, are entering this. And somebody won, you know, they're only like 5 pounds off. At the end of the day, Francis Galton goes up to the organizers and says, hey, could I have all those entries that people wrote down? Like, sure. And he was into data and he takes it home and he averages all the data of all these people who are both experts and non-experts. And it was 787 people guessed. The winner had been off by 5 pounds. The actual weight was 1,198 pounds of this ox. The average of all the people was 1,197 pounds.
No way.
They're off by 1 pound. And so he wrote this book. He's devoted his life research to saying we often underestimate the wisdom of crowds, that if you just use the wisdom of a crowd as opposed to one or two experts, it's actually often better. And I think that just kind of illustrates what I want us to get into today is...
Well, can I play devil's advocate for a second? So you're saying wisdom of crowds, but this makes me think of this age-old saying that our parents have probably told both of us at one point in our lives, well, if your friends are going to go jump off a cliff, are you going to go do it too?
Yes.
So what if the crowd is leading you down the wrong path? Like, how do you know when to go with the crowd and when not to go with the crowd?
Well, you know, don't be dumb. I mean, that's kind of like my motto in life is like, just don't be dumb. We're going to be fine. Just don't be dumb. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, right. Don't jump off the crowd. Right. Don't jump off the cliff. And to be fair, in his book, he gives multiple different qualifiers. Like the wisdom of crowds only works with these certain types of things.
Yeah. Cause but I think I was going to say, like, I think we see in our culture today, this contrast, right? Like we have worldly wisdom where sometimes it does feel easy and it feels like the right thing to go along with the crowd, but it completely contradicts biblical wisdom. And so I feel that tension for myself. Yeah. And so like, would you speak into that a little more?
Well, and that's why as Christians, we have to ground ourselves in the scripture.
Yeah.
And so really what I want to do, I'm not preaching a sermon here, but I still want to go through some scripture to say, hey, here's how the Holy Scriptures teach us to involve the wisdom of crowds. Right. And so, you know, when we think if part one of this series is what is the wise thing to do, part two, we're talking how to answer that question. And specifically, it's to seek out other people's wisdom when I don't have that wisdom. So let me, we're going to go through Proverbs 2, 1 through 11. And I want to actually start with the last few verses of it because it shows the results of if you live out verses 1 through 8, here's what'll be true. So here's what verses 9 through 11 of Proverbs 2 says. Then you will understand what is right, just, and fair. You'll find the right way to go. For wisdom will enter your heart and knowledge will fill you with joy. Wise choices will watch over you. Understanding will keep you safe. So it says, if you do what we just said in verses 1 through 8, man, you're going to know right, just, and fair.
Yeah.
You'll have wisdom. You'll have joy. Wise choices will watch over you. So what does it say?
Yeah.
Okay, so verse one. We'll just go through these verses in our conversation. Verse one, Solomon's writing, my child, listen to what I say and treasure my commands. Mm. And so if you think he's telling his son to listen to his wisdom, my takeaway first is I need wise mentors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I have to have wise mentors. I love what Dave Ramsey says about this. He says, if you want success in any area, go find five people or more who are super successful in that area, sit them down and say, hey, tell me what you did. And so he says, marriage, like if you want to be married 50 years, find five couples who've been married 50 years, sit them down and say, what'd you do? If you want to be a millionaire, find five millionaires, sit them down, say, what'd you do? You know, whatever the thing is. And what he's saying is what Proverbs 2 verse 1 says is I need wise mentors.
And we all need mentors,
right? We all do.
We absolutely do. And I think that if you think you don't need a mentor, that's probably a sign that you need one more than you think.
Yes, that's true. That's really funny, actually. You know, Lindsay and I were church planners for 15 years. And we were in this crazy world of life revolved around church. We were given everything we had to it, but we see pastors' kids. There's no lukewarm pastors' kids.
Oh, absolutely. I am a pastor's kid. And I always say, like, they're either running the world like in ministry, or they're running the world like in the deepest, darkest parts of the world. Like yeah. there is no in between.
Yeah, I totally think that's true. Mm-hmm. And so I actually need to ask you this question later offline.
Oh, no.
But what we do is Lindsay and I, whenever we meet somebody who had raised, who's a pastor who raised kids who love Jesus in his church, we'd say, okay, sit down. We're going to buy you lunch. Like, tell us what you did.
Yeah.
And I remember one in particular, they had moved to a major U.S. city, taken over this church that was dying. It was like 100 people. Their kids were babies. Mm. And he said in his interview, listen, just so you know, I pastor my family first. Mm. And my kids, when they're older, will be in the best youth group in the city. And I hope that's at this church. Mm. But if another church has the best youth group, our kids are going there, even though I'll still lead this church. We just want you to know that in advance so you're prepared for it.
Yeah.
Now, he went on to say, fortunately, by the time our kids were teenagers, we had the best youth group in the city. So I was very, you know, happy to do that. Yeah. But I was like, oh, yeah, we'll totally do that. In fact, in our church in our church plant, when we finally were able to afford hiring a youth minister, I told him this. And he got completely freaked out and went to my executive pastor and was like, I think Carl's firing me or telling me that like his kids are never coming to church here. And he's like, no. Carl's just trying to put pressure on you.
Right.
You got to lead well.
It's a
he
good
has faith
challenge,
in you or you wouldn't be here.
You're calling him to better. Yes. Yeah.
But we have asked so many pastors that question of how do you raise kids who love Jesus in his church, you know, to have ministry make you a better parent, and being a parent make you better at ministry, not competing.
I
need wise mentors.
Absolutely. And then I'll speak for everybody, I think, when I say, where do we even find these mentors? You know, like, and even more so, I think back to my life and I think, how do I even know that the mentors that I'm choosing are wise? Because I think in the story of Job, you know, Job has three friends and they are giving him sometimes unsolicited advice of what to do in his despair. And they are saying true characteristics about God, but ultimately their advice is very off base. And so what are even some characteristics that you've seen of some wise mentors that you've had in your life? Like who should we look for? What things should we look for?
Yeah, you know, I'm pulling up Job since you brought that up, because at the end of Job chapter 2 is when his friends show up. Mm-hmm. And this is such an overlooked part of his
story. I know what you're about to say. Say it. Do it.
And it says they get together. They see how much he suffered. They come visit him. They barely recognized him. Verse 13. Mm-hmm. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights. Mm-hmm. No one said a word to Job, for they saw that his suffering was too great for words.
Absolutely.
Man, I would so never not say something for 7 days.
Right.
Because I know the right answer.
We talk too much for that. Yeah.
And but I think a wise mentor, since you brought up them, knows when to keep their mouth shut.
Yeah.
You know, there's this thing, there's this matrix that so many people, maybe most people, have seen that I think is so powerful. The know and don't know matrix, you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know, so please share.
Okay, so this is like a thing in, you know, leadership where there's things that I know that I know, right? So I know that 2 + 2 = 4. I know that I know that.
Right.
There are things I know that I don't know. Mm. And so when my daughter first started calculus and she came to me because she was confused with a problem, I said, babe, I'm sorry. You've outclassed me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know that I don't know that, you know? And she goes, no. Well, look, it's just this and this and this. And I'm like,
I still don't know.
I know that I don't know this. Like, you're going to have to find somebody else. There's also things for all of us that we don't know we know. Mm. For example, my wife has a very peacekeeping personality and, she's very good at having what feel to her like confrontational conversations and she doesn't realize she's great at it.
Wow.
And she's like, no, I'm not a confrontational person. I can't do that. I'm like, every time you do it, it goes well.
Wow.
And she's like, been doing this for 20 years. She still doesn't believe me, but she's great at it. And then there's things we don't know that we don't know. And that's just where we are at the place where I think I know everything, right? And I don't look for blind spots, and I'm not aware that blind spots exist.
Yeah.
And I think a wise mentor is really acutely in tune with the things on this chart.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? Let's go back to scripture, though. Verse 2 of Proverbs 2 says, turn your ears to wisdom, concentrate on understanding, cry out for insight, ask for understanding, search for them as you would for silver, seek them like you would hidden treasure. So like if I'm having my teaching TV, right, I would highlight those words, search for them, seek them, cry out, ask. Because the lesson I learned is I need to take initiative. You know, you ask about getting mentors.
Yeah.
Like they're not going to, I've never had anybody come to me and say, can I mentor you?
Yes. I was going to say, I love the, in verse 4, when it says search and seek. So what does that look like practically? You know, I think, okay, do I just go make a post on Facebook Marketplace that says, hi, I'm Sarah. I need a mentor, right? Like how do we not be weird about it? Because I think as Christians, we can make things weird a lot and overcomplicate things. So what does it look like to search for a mentor?
Well, here's a mistake I made. I don't know if this would be true in every occasion, but when I was about 23 years old, there was a guy in my church, first ministry, that I really looked up to. He was older, wise. He was like a mature Christian who didn't realize he was a mature Christian, if that makes sense. And I took him out to breakfast one time and said, hey, would you be my spiritual mentor? And it kind of like freaked him out. And he was like, I mean, I don't know what to do to mentor you. And I realized like I overwhelmed him by making it sound so official. And I should have just said, hey, can we have breakfast every so often? I'm going to bring you a couple questions. He'd be like, yeah, let's do breakfast.
Right.
You know?
So don't be weird about it, Carl.
Yes, don't be dumb. You know, I heard a story years ago, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher this a little bit, but John Maxwell, that pastor turned leadership expert, who's written a million books. He talked about early in his ministry career, his church was doing well, but he was so green and felt so clueless that if I remember the story right, he found a list of like the pastors of the biggest churches in the country. I mean, this was like 40 years ago and wrote them each a letter. I think this is how the story goes and asked, can I come to you and buy you lunch to ask you some leadership questions? And he sent it to like 50 people. And he didn't even know if he'd get a response, but two of them, I think it was, wrote back and said, yeah, let's meet up. And so he went to those two, came with his questions, and he said it was great. They helped me a ton. And I think there's just creative ways we can do that. We never know. You know, I love that story because he didn't know which ones, if any of them, would respond, but he was going to, he was going to try something. You know, Jesus says you have not because you ask not. And obviously that's talking about prayer, but it's true in everyday life as well. I think we never outgrow our need for mentors in anything. And I think they have to be successful at that thing. Like, if someone's not good at golf, I don't want them teaching me, right? If somebody's been divorced twice, I'm probably not going to ask them. I may ask them what mistakes they made, but I'm not going to ask them how to build a great marriage. If somebody's not a believer, I'm not going to ask them, hey, how do you prioritize what's important in life? Because we just have completely different goals. At the risk of being offensive, there's, you know, at different gyms I've been to in the past, trainers, there's trainers who are out of shape. And I actually saw at a gym recently, someone show up, like I was checking in at the front desk, and I heard somebody else showing up and said, hey, I'm supposed to meet my trainer today. I'm new to the gym. And they paired him up with their trainer. But just from looks, and you can't always tell everything from looks in a gym, but just from looks, the person who is getting trained looked way more in shape than the person who is doing the training.
You don't want that to happen with your trainer. That's pretty rough. It's like, I mean, you just got to walk out what you're talking about, right? Yeah. Like walk the walk, talk the talk. I do. Don't judge me on my shape, guys.
You gotta stay in shape. But it makes sense,
true. Yeah, it definitely calls you to a higher standard because I am a trainer in a gym and it's, I can't actually train people well if I'm not living it out well.
Yeah.
And I think with different groups that I've led, you know, small groups and things like that, there's a level of accountability that is there personally because I'm like, I can't teach somebody what I haven't learned myself.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be able to like think of a tree analogy, right? Like if I'm climbing a tree, I can only pull somebody up to the branch that I'm on. I can't throw them higher, right? So I have to continually be climbing and pull people up along
That's
with
great.
Me.
So let me just skip ahead in my notes.
Go for it.
Because, you know, a kind of side thing to this whole principle is every single person watching this should be mentoring someone.
Yeah.
And that, you know, most of us think, no, I'm not qualified. Mm. Who am I to get, I don't have wisdom to give other people, yeah. but I would say most people don't know that they know mm. wisdom in some area. Yeah. And you've probably heard before, a lot of Christians have said this before, everybody needs a Paul, a Barnabas, and a Timothy.
Yes, I was just about to ask, what are the yeah. three, the Paul, Barnabas, yeah. Timothy?
Yeah. And the idea, if you haven't heard it before, is we all need a Paul, someone who mm. is mentoring us. We all need a yeah. Barnabas, someone who's on our level encouraging us. We all need a mm. Timothy, somebody we're mentoring. Yeah. And no matter where you are in your spiritual journey, mm. you may have gotten baptized yesterday. Mm. There is somebody who is less spiritually mature than you in some way that you can help, yeah. has less wisdom with some aspect of living that you can help. And we all need to be on the lookout for that, because I think we're not poured into just to get full. We're poured right. into to pour out, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know if you know this. I'm sure you do. But in verse 4, there's a plural tense of yeah. this word that honestly I overlooked when I first read through this chapter. And it says, search for them as you would for silver, seek them like hidden treasures. And so I constantly am amazed by scripture that it's so intentional, even yeah. in the like tenses of words. And so is Solomon saying here, I need multiple mentors in my life? Or is he saying, I need mentors for like different areas of my life?
Yeah, I need multiple mentors. Mm. I mean, I think that's what he's saying here. Yeah. I think that plural is really important. Mm. Have you watched the show on Netflix, Full Swing, that follows PGA
no,
golfers. You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So it's one of these, like, I think they saw how, like, the F1 show did so good, and they did, mm-hmm. like, a behind-the-scenes thing for PGA, yeah. and it's so fascinating. but, yeah, I could just go talk about that for a while on Scotty Scheffler and how awesome he is. But one thing I was so interested in on these mm-hmm. guys is the PGA Tour players, like, they have a swing coach, which I expected.
Mm. They even know that was a thing in golf.
Yeah. So even the best ones have a mm. swing coach. Some of them have a different coach who's a putting coach. Multiple of them have a different, almost all of them have a different fitness coach when they mm. do, like, their gym workouts, throwing the medicine balls, getting a good core yeah. and all this. Multiple of them have some kind of psychologist for mm. mental coaching. Multiple of them have chefs for, like, their, you know, nutrition yeah. coaching, you could call it. And I was just astounded, because I look at these guys as, like, prodigies, mm. which they are. You don't get anybody on the PGA Tour yeah. without being absolutely amazing. Mm. But all of them have, like, 3, 4, 5 more types of coaches, mm. you know. And I just thought, man, these guys, and that's just for golf. And so if that's their thing, if my thing is following Christ and mm. living life to the full in every area, I probably need some mentors for my mm. finances. I need some mentors for spiritual disciplines. Yeah. I need some mentors for friendship. I need mm. some mentors for parenting. I mean, it can get a little overwhelming. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, what are the mentors that you currently have in different areas of your life? You know, that's just really as good. An example, because I think that we can say, okay, I need a mentor. But, you know, what you said last in part one really stuck with me too. He said, you know, wisdom's going to look different for all of us. Yeah. And so I think all of us will need different mentors in different areas. So yeah. What are some examples that you do?
Well, let me, at the risk of being offensive again, let's talk about politics. How about that?
Great. Didn't know we were going
there's
there.
There's kind of a principle I use in voting that okay. you look really nervous right now.
I'm very scared right now.
let's make this a clip on Instagram.
Great.
But there's a principle I use in voting that helps me walk freely and lightly in mm. voting that I actually apply to my mentors. So when I vote for an official in the government, I'm electing a governor, not a pastor. Mm. I'm electing a president, not a pastor. So I don't expect the people I vote for, I'm not going to hold them to the same standard that I would someone I'm asking to lead a mission trip or small group mm. at church.
Yeah.
Because most of them wouldn't pass, right? I need them to be good at a certain type of thing.
Yeah.
And create freedom for me to do mm. my type of thing with Christ.
Yeah.
So the parallel for that is when I look at a mentor, I don't need you to have everything figured out. If you're good at this one thing, I want to learn from you on this mm. one thing. So that's an important principle to me.
Yeah, that's
but when
really
you
good.
Ask what mentors I have right now, let me think about this. Well, okay. I just asked a guy. We had a couple over to our house who's a couple decades older than Lindsay and I. And I said, hey, you've told me enough where I can tell you're really strategic with your generosity. Mm. Tell me how you do your giving. Like, I know you at minimum tithe to the church, but I know you give a lot more on top of that. How do you figure that out? And he said, every person / organization to send us a report every December. And we tell them, anybody, even people mm-hmm. we're close to, we're only making a 1-year commitment.
Yeah.
And we'll reevaluate when we get everybody's reports in December
wow.
and see who we're going to support next year.
Yeah.
And so I ran with that. So I reached out to a couple missionaries we support mm-hmm. around the globe. And it was really weird because we're close to both of them, have relationships. But I said, hey, we're trying this new thing with our generosity where we're doing this. Mm. And, you know, just so you know, we want to hear stories and see stats and just please keep us apprised of the effectiveness of your ministry because we get so many asks. We have to say no to things and we want to support the best things.
Mm. And that's a great example.
That's a new mentor I have, you know, is just mentoring me in generosity. You know, when I look for mentors, I actually wrote in my notes here, I have mentors named Jim Collins, Elon Musk,
you
Patrick Lencioni, Craig Groeschel. And somebody said, you hang out with Craig Groeschel? I'm like, no, I've never hung out with Craig Groeschel.
Just learned from him.
But his books, his podcasts mentor me.
Yeah.
And I quote Craig Groeschel and multiple other authors and podcasters, you know, with fitness, I could name a couple of mentors I have on YouTube who are like, don't do this. You'll hurt your shoulder. I'm like, Roger, I won't do that exercise ever again. What other mentors do I have? I love Elon Musk.
Do.
I just think he's wildly crazy fascinating.
He is very fascinating.
Yes. Everyone has to agree with that on some level, right? But I'm just watching him to see how it works out. And somebody said, well, don't copy him. You're not as smart as Elon. I'm like, no problem. I'm not going to do that. But I just want to see, because he's really good at efficiency.
Yeah.
And he's really good at producing great products. How does he do that? You know, there's something to learn there.
I do have a thought, too, of have you seen the same mentors throughout a significant chunk of your life, or does it change with the seasons? Like, is there a time when a mentor is just with you for a couple of years and then, you know, circumstances change, you know, things change in your life? Like, is there a time when we release mentors?
Yeah. You know, if it's somebody we're not close to, that's easier. Yeah. I think of a pastor who for a good decade or two as I was starting ministry, man, was so influential on me. Mm. And then honestly, his theology kind of went off the rails. And I'm like,
that's tough.
I actually need to stop listening to you because you're so good at communicating. I'm afraid I'll accidentally buy into something I know is wrong theology because you're so compelling.
Yeah.
And so I had to kind of like stop listening to that pastor, which was sad to me. But I just knew for me it was a wise thing because I'm so easily influenced by people who are good communicators.
Yeah.
So that's an example where I had to do that.
I think,
you know, people who are good at raising little kids may not be the people who are good at leading adult children, you know. People are good at helping me get out of debt, may not be the ones to help me figure out how to buy a house later.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I think there definitely is, like, I'm going to try and hone in on, like, this is the thing you are good at. So I need you in this area to help me figure out what is the wise thing to do.
Yeah, I think that's really good practically, just to think through the different areas of life. Because I think that I'm really guilty of having too many voices speak into one area of my life.
Mm.
I have what I call decision paralysis, to where I will ask and ask and ask so many people around me the same thing because I do want to make the best and the wisest decision, but sometimes it keeps me from making a decision at all.
Yeah.
And I feel really stuck. And I think there is such a thing as too much counsel sometimes. And I hope I'm not the only one that struggles with that. But what would you say to us that feel stuck in that? Because we do want to make really good and wise decisions, but we just keep asking and keep asking.
When I have done that, it's because I'm asking the wrong question. It's because I'm trying to find what's the right thing to do.
Yeah, that's really good.
And if I'm asking over and over, it's like, well, if they disagree, then I have paralysis. Because it's like, well, then I'm going to do wrong because this person I trust is this, this person I trust is this. But if I'm asking what's the wise thing to do, then I know God has given me freedom that I probably can't mess it up.
Yeah.
Right. If I'm prayerfully trying to honor him, he's going to take care of me, which is still hard. Right.
It's still hard because I think the Lord sometimes is telling me, Sarah, just make a decision,
like
just move in one direction or another.
Yeah.
But it is freeing to know, OK, like those decisions of right and left, that's where we have free will, and we have to trust that God's going to take care of us no matter if we go right or left.
It's so interesting that Jesus latched onto Peter, because Peter over and over said and did dumb things. Like, I just said, don't be dumb. Like, that was Peter. You know, it's like he sank in the water. He said that thing where Jesus is like, get behind me, Satan. Like, can you imagine Jesus calling you Satan?
I think that's I would crawl into a hole for the rest of my life.
Yes, exactly. Like, I'm going to go away now. But I think reading between the lines, it sure seemed like the reason Jesus loved Peter and designated him as leader is because he was the one who's willing to go.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'd rather you just Nobody else got out of the boat.
Right.
Tried to walk on water.
Right.
You know, I think I heard a preacher one time say, I think when Peter got back in the boat, he wasn't embarrassed for sinking. He was like,
I just walked on water,
you know, and nobody else did.
Yeah. Right. I think that fear of failure too is something that I really struggle with, because I do want to make like the best and wisest decision and not step a toe out of line of God's will for my life. And I think we have to be okay with knowing, okay, that might not have been the wisest decision, but like, God's will for me is still good. You know, I really struggle with that fear of failure because I don't want to like go in the wrong direction at all.
Yeah. And I don't think you can fail per se in wisdom issues. You know, God has not given us a spirit of fear, right? But of power and love and self-discipline. And I think the only we fear God, honor the King. We get that backwards so much. I fear people in front of me and just honor God.
Yeah.
And that's why this question has been so freeing to me, is because I'm not trying to figure out the right thing, because then I get paralyzed and I'm like, you know, is it date right now or not? Is it is it get out of debt right now or give? Like, what's right? I'm gonna sin if I do the wrong thing. That attitude is just not in Scripture. You know, Jesus says, I love the Message translation of Matthew 11. He says, I'll help you live freely and lightly.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's so good.
I want that.
Yeah, same. You know? I do too.
So one more point I would say about this is, you know, back in verse 4, is it says, search as you would for silver, seek like hidden treasures, like the silver treasures, those words I'd highlight on the screen.
Yeah.
Is silver can tarnish? Like, my wife got out our silver when we hosted Thanksgiving. She had like polish it and stuff. If you have treasures, like, I have to take care of treasures. I put those in a special place. And so a really important part of this is I need to do what they say. Like, I don't know if have you ever had anybody ask you for wise advice and it was like pretty obvious to you, and then they go do the opposite and you're like, why did you waste my time?
Right.
Like, you already knew what you were going to do.
Right. Why did you need my answer? Yeah.
I thought of years ago, I was doing a sermon on marriage in our old church I used to lead. And, you know, I'd done a lot of sermons on marriage. I'm trying to think of some way to keep it fresh. So I reached out as I was writing to about 10 couples in our church. And I said, tell me like some practical things you do to protect your marriage. And I'll never forget this, because they said a bunch of great things, but every single man, like all 10 of them, except I think one, said this thing I never heard anybody say before. They said, I don't text anybody under any circumstance of the opposite sex without copying my wife.
Yeah.
And I was like, that seems kind of weird. Yeah. And I asked them why, and they said, well, I've just read too many bad stories. And keep in mind, these are all men whose marriages I looked up to. Like, your wife would never suspect anything. Like, you don't need to do that. But I went home and I told my wife that. I said, hey, like all these marriages that I want us to be like, do this, I think we should do this. And she's like, okay.
Yeah. She's like, great. And but you know what's funny is that I think about my friends, and I have 3 or 4 couples that I can think of off the top of my head that do that. You know, and their marriages are flourishing and thriving. So there might be something there. Like, take that, you know, to
Well, and it was
home,
one of those things. It's actually a hassle every time we do. It's like, oh, yeah, I need to ask her a question. I should copy Lindsay. And it was even funny at Christmas time because, you know, we have full access to each other's phones. And I'm like checking my wife's phone all the time or something. But she says, hey, you're not allowed to check my phone during Christmas time. but if you do, you'll see that I texted these two friends of yours separately without copying you, because I'm doing some present research. I was like, all right, I got it.
Yeah, that's fair.
But
that's
just like, because of those men, you know, however many years ago, we had this like boundary that, other people we want to be like told us we should have, and doesn't seem like a big deal to us, but they're wise and they do it.
It's so good just because it's that level of accountability. You even shared stories in part one of people that wouldn't even go into gas stations because they struggled with different things, right? And I think that that is just so good to think through. When we think of wise things to do, there might be some boundaries that you have to put in place that seem a little crazy and a little weird, but it's keeping you in those wise choices. And I think that's a great example.
Yeah. You know, we like to say in opinions liberty, in matters of opinion liberty and all things love.
Yeah.
This is where that matters, right? When we say in opinions liberty, it's not like, well, I think the music's too loud or we need more lights or less lights in the worship service. That's not what it's about. It's about these things that are deeply personal that we need to do to honor Christ in our personal life. Like, I am not going to force on you that you can't go in a gas station. I'm not going to force on you that you have to listen to that music or can't listen to that music. Like, for me, what is the wise thing to do?
You know,
I think of the Bible story of Rehoboam. He became king after Solomon. It seems like he was the one that Proverbs was written to, right? And it seemed like he skipped Proverbs chapter 2 because the story of him first becoming king is he goes to the people say, hey, can you give us a break from taxes? And you think, like, today, that's what every politician wants to do. Like, every politician be like, I'll lower your tax. And we're like, okay, I'll vote for you.
Great.
And think if Rehoboam had, like, cut taxes, the scriptures had just said it's the richest country in the history of the world. Israel would never be as rich as they were then. And how famous and popular would he be if he just gave him a tax break, right? Like, just like today. And so he goes to his father's old council and says, hey, what do y'all think? And they're like, you know, if you do this one thing, they're going to serve you forever. And then he goes to his young college buddies and they're like, nah, man, show them how powerful you are. And he listens to him, the kingdom gets ripped away. And so he didn't, you know, he almost did the right thing, but he went to the people who are wrong. Didn't follow the wise counsel's advice and the whole thing gets ripped apart.
Yeah, man, that is just so convicting even for me as I think through, you know, when we need those Pauls in our life, we do have to listen to what they say, because I think, you know, even with our parents, sometimes we think, oh, they don't know anything. Like, their advice is not, you know, modern or whatever, but there's wisdom. There is wisdom in listening to people that have different experience than you, that have lived longer than you. And man, that's just a really good example of, okay, if you listen to your peers, you might not go down the right path.
So if we were wrapping up, I would tell people, keep asking what's the wise thing to do. And when you're not absolutely sure, seek out wise mentors that you can trust about that finite thing. Don't be weird about it.
Don't be weird about it.
And say, hey, if you're in this scenario, what would you say is the wise thing to do? And then go do it.
That's great. You know, I think this has been so helpful even for me and just encouraging when we're breaking down Proverbs chapter 1 and 2. And so we've talked through, you know, in part one, what is the wise thing to do? And then today talking through seeking wise counsel. So what can you prepare us for to learn in part three?
So part three is going to be, how do you live that out? Like, when you know the wise thing to do, then the rest of Proverbs chapter 2 is going to teach us a key word that says, here's how you live that out every single day.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, Carl, thank you. We love your wisdom. We appreciate you being here. Just love getting to learn from you and looking forward to part three.
Thanks, Sarah. It's been a blast.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Thanks for listening. If today's message made you realize you need to take your next step with Jesus, we would love to help you with that. You can connect with us on any of our social media platforms throughout the week or visit our website at southeastchristian.org. And if you want to hear more content like this, you can check out our Sermons podcast or our One at a Time podcast. Both can be found everywhere podcasts are available. Have a great week.